Let's see.
I will be gone the 23rd of June for that meeting.
Okay.
On the 23rd, I gotta be in, flying to Wisconsin, Minneapolis, Wisconsin area that
okay.
time.
I think I've only, in 12 years, I've only had to cancel a meeting for lack of a quorum like one time.
Now this is what day?
23rd of June.
Because, let me see what I've got, make sure I'm gonna be here. 23rd, yeah, barely. We're gonna come back from California on the...
Just in case he hasn't texted you or anything, Commissioner Blake will not be in.
Yeah, he emailed last night.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, Commissioner, everything's rolling.
We ready?
Yeah.
All right. Well, good morning, everyone. We'd like to welcome you to our Iron County Commission meeting this Tuesday, the 27th day of May, 2025. It's about 9:04 in the morning. We would like to excuse Commissioner Blake this morning. But we will go ahead and get started this morning with a prayer offered by Sam Woodall. And following that, John Whitaker will lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Our Father in heaven, we thank thee for this beautiful day. We're grateful to live where we live and enjoy the blessings of thy hand in our life. We thank thee for recent moisture and pray that that might continue for this area. Grateful to know that our prayers are answered. We ask now that thy spirit will be with us, that we can engage in a good work, and that thou would bless us to uphold good values that would be pleasing unto thee. We're thankful for this portion of the vineyard we have to function in, and pray a blessing be upon these people, that we will do the best that we can, and that we will see the fruits of putting our faith in thee, and that we'll continue to have good discussions, and that all may be well. We offer this prayer humbly in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen. Amen.
Please follow me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you to both of you. We will go to our, approving the minutes. What was the date on those minutes?
The 12th.
So May 12th minutes, have you had a chance to look at those? I have, and entertain a motion.
Make a motion to approve the minutes from May 12th meeting.
It's been moved, and I second that, and it's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Thank you. And then our approval of claims for payment from May 12th, 25 to May 26th, 25.
Make a motion for approval of claims from May 12th to May 26th, 2025.
Second. It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Thank you. We will go to our departmental reports and start with our clerk, John. Our world traveler.
Good morning. A few things to cover this morning. The municipal primary is coming up. The filing period is June 2nd through the 6th, and that will be with the cities. We coordinate with them on that election. The filing is actually their responsibility. And then we enter it into the statewide program as far as each candidate. We've got some good partners with the cities, and we're grateful to work with them. Our office is going well. I don't know if Jeannie would agree with that, but But anyway, really grateful for the hard work that everybody does. We continue to have multiple trainings from the state and from Weber State. And I'm going to maybe take some time in another meeting. We had a good meeting with USIP, the Utah County's Indemnity Pool. We do a lot of acronyms. And it was our risk manager conference. I'm actually going to spend some time with you, but I do want to talk just a little bit about USIP as a body. So the Utah County's Indemnity Pool, and most of the Utah counties are members of this pool, and it's not insurance, and it's an indemnity pool, but we basically lump our money together, and then we have a group of people up in Midvale, and they actually administer the insurance for us. They help us with things like the risk management training, but also they help us with claims. So when we have like a car accident, or you know, if somebody gets sued, Sam, then we coordinate with USIP on mitigating that risk and trying to protect the county. You know, USIP is an interesting thing. It's been in existence, I believe, since 1992, and it's really been a positive for counties when it comes to insuring, like, law enforcement officers. Entities that have to rely on the open market, they almost can't get insurance anymore. But because we're part of a pool and because we aggressively try to mitigate the risk for counties, and because of the USIP organization, they have teams of attorneys and some really good claims managers and really good leadership, we were able to keep good coverage such as law enforcement. Our vehicle coverage, of course, most of our claims are vehicle. We put a lot of miles on, especially with law enforcement on the road. And our old Lieutenant Schlosser, he always used to say, we have a problem with large dogs. We hit a lot of deer. And so working with USIP, we can mitigate that. Wade is tremendous when it comes to kind of banging out some of those dents, keeping the value of our vehicles up. And then when it comes to some more serious stuff, I mean, not that those aren't serious, but when it comes to, suits, or if we have, you know, claims like wrongful termination and things, they're handled very well, very professionally, and the county's interests are looked out for. Another cool thing about the Utah County's indemnity pool is that we have equity in the pool, and so it's ran very conservatively, and that means they keep plenty of cash on reserve, and then they have backstop policies for things like cyber or our liability, so that if it goes above $3 million, then there's an actual policy in place. And so the equity that most member counties have is equal to or greater than 1 year's contribution. And so that allows us to have a bit of stability and longevity with the program, and to be able to continue. One of the underlying concerns that we have is to be able to continue operations as counties if things go badly. And so if we have, you know, catastrophic loss, which sometimes happens, that's absorbed by the pool. And every, you know, one of the things that we agreed as is that we share the risk wholly. So if the Beaver County Courthouse burns down, then all of our equity goes down just a little bit to kind of cover that. But we, you know, Commissioner Adams, Alma Adams, was on the board for nearly the whole time he served. And, you know, it was interesting to me when grateful for it. You know, another thing that most people can't get, most entities can't get, is cyber coverage. And we still have us, and they are fantastic when it comes to advocacy, training, when it comes to representing us in difficult legal matters such as wrongful termination. And we don't talk about those often because that's usually done in a closed session. But those kind of issues are handled very well, and the county's interests are preserved, and I'm grateful for that. And then I just want to cover one more thing. I don't want to take too much time. Another group that I help with is the Iron County Special Service District Number 3. And that's basically a pass-through body. It's appointed by the commission. There's three members, and they vote on how to spend monies received through the Secure Rural Schools program and through the state PILT, or Payment in Lieu of Taxes program. And Secure Rural Schools is interesting. It goes clear back to 1915. And the program, the idea is that counties and school districts can use that money. So we get some of the money, the school district gets some of the money, and the idea is we make school available for kids in rural and impoverished areas. And so the way the county has decided to go about that is that the single best thing we feel like we can do is to provide good roads for kids that are in outlying areas. And so we use that money to cover road supplies. And I'm only bringing this up because it also requires continuing approval by Congress. And in this year, the Congress decided to not fund Secure Rural Schools. And so our amount went from about $180,000 that would have gone toward road supplies to like $9,000. So, and the county can and will absorb it. This isn't the first time this has happened. And also that doesn't count about the same amount that comes from payment in lieu of taxes for state-owned properties. We get PILT, or payment in lieu of taxes, for federal properties, but some of the legal requirements make it make more sense to go through this Special Service District Number 3, and then it's actually budgeted, and then there's a transfer from SSD Number 3 to the road department for road supplies. And that's been the direction that has been taken for quite a few years. But just so you know, in this next cycle, there won't be as much available because Congress didn't renew the SRS portion of it.
How often is that not the case?
I've seen it twice in 12 years. So
they just didn't renew it?
Yeah.
What's the driving force behind that? Or
I don't know. I can do some research and find out for you, but I think one year they failed to do it, and I don't know if it was a conscious choice this year or they just failed to do it, but it has to be proactively approved each year. Otherwise, it reverts back to that 1915 rule, which is about $8,000 for us. At one point, it was like $247,000. We used to get quite a bit, but it's been in the $180,000, $150,000 range the last few years. So, and then that SSD board, they're farmers and particularly chosen from rural areas and representing some of the outlying areas of the county. And so we meet in December, which is better for them. They kind of decide how to allocate that money. We keep a little bit set aside. At one point, we considered using the money for a crusher. We had kind of worked with Bruce Anderson on maybe working toward that, but he's like, you know, it would take us forever to save up for that because it was like a $1.5 million machine. But the idea was that a crusher would really help with SRS needs and also things like the Kolob Road in the summer and things like that. But as it turns out, that didn't work out. So any other questions on that? There's kind of a lot there.
Well, you know, they have a PILT fly-in where commissioners fly back to D.C. and lobby Congress and remind them, hey, this is important to us, pass this. I went once, and I think we addressed SRS too in those lobbying.
And I would suggest if you have relationships, like say with Senator Lee, I know that Commissioner Blake has got a relationship with Representative Malloy. I think SRS is an important tool, especially because it really does, the way we've got it set up, it really does benefit those kids in the outlying areas. Because what happens is we don't do roads in towns. And so it seems maybe oversimplistic, but by buying the road supplies, you know, the crushed rock or the asphalt or whatever, we really do make the, you know, school attendance more accessible for kids. And by cutting that funding, that definitely undermines that. And of course, as in many things, if we lose that funding, we pick ourselves up by our bootstraps and figure out a different way to pay for it. But it is a valuable tool in the arsenal. Thank you. Yep.
Thank you.
Thanks, John. All right. Council on Aging. Good morning.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
I brought handouts.
Awesome.
Oh, hey.
Sam, I didn't want you to fill out that one.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, madam.
Okay. Well, I'm going to probably read so I stay on task. So, honestly, our Meals on Wheels program has increased by 400 meals compared to January. A lot of it is from people that are moving in. They don't have a lot of family, and so their family are calling us saying, look, I live in California. How do I take care of my mother or whatever? So between that, I mean, you can see on our spreadsheet, Congregate are all of the people that come into the centers to eat. MOW stands for Meals on Wheels. And then our monthly total. So you can see the breakdown between Cedar and Parowan. So that means a total of 6,666 meals, weird number, were delivered from January through April. I don't have May's quite yet because, of course, we're not at the end of May. And at about 15% of that growth was in Enoch alone. Currently, my longest route, I have 5 routes total in Cedar. My longest one is Enoch, and part of that is the vastness of Enoch. But that takes anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour longer, and most of my drivers are all volunteers. So that's actually put a strain on the volunteers to where some of the people are like, I'll help out on the other routes, but I won't do Enoch. So I'm getting a little nervous on that, but I think that coming up here, probably within a few years at the longest, we're going to need to split Enoch. I'm going to need another truck because if not, we're going to be delivering until 2 p.m. and I'm not going to be able to find any drivers. So I am a little stressed on that. Also with the number of people, of course, and rising food costs that don't stay consistent. Currently, our budget's a little bit over what I would like it to be, and not sure what we're going to see. We definitely have more people coming in or needing those meals than we do not needing them. On the last couple of snowstorms we had, I mean, this is a really weird winter, but our spring, we had those really wet snowstorms. And that showed that we still had the leak problem in that new addition of the basement. Big old puddles throughout the bottoms, warping all over the floor, damaged the trim. So we had an asphalt company come in and they sealed every crack they could find in the asphalt and the sidewalks, everything they could find. And some of them, they said, it just kept going. The tar stuff was just going. But after we had those rainstorms that we had pretty bad in May, I have dry basement.
We couldn't figure out where that water was coming from. So glad we found it.
Well, and you're not seeing it in the walls. It's all just coming up underground.
Well, it was a miracle because Chad Carter was up there one day trying to figure it out. And it was raining and he saw water coming into a kind of a little cement culvert and not coming out. And he thought, and it was going right down, mm-hmm. seeping down in the foundation. So it was fortunate that he was there when it was raining.
So he could see that.
Figured it out. We were racking our brains trying to figure that one out.
I'm really hoping that is a permanent fix, you know, but
It should.
Time goes on. We're not sure. So we do have damaged floors again. Like I said, they're all warped down there. I've heard we've replaced the flooring there once before.
They just took it up. They've taken it up twice and let it dry and put it back.
I think we need to look at a better solution, whether it's some kind of epoxy or something. So if we have anything else happen again, easy cleanup. Hopefully it's not damaged. So I'm trying to find the best solution that's also still slip resistant. And hopefully we don't have to worry about it ever again.
I'll come look it up.
I would appreciate that. That'd be great.
Epoxy coating would be easy to do.
Maybe. Well.
They're just used an LVP, a waterproof LVP, but after two times, it did cup the planks a little bit. So.
Yeah, you can kind of see them all just kind of bowing a little bit and a bunch of sediment that's just kind of hard to get off.
The sediment won't clean off? Or
like a little bit, but, I mean, you'd have to have somebody down there scrubbing every single
buffer
one
of those. Buff it off, or have you guys tried a buffer or anything?
It doesn't. You have to get down there and, like, literally probably use a scouring powder or something with a bunch of cleaner and... I think it'd be a pain. Plus, the trim's all ruined. I think we should just do rubber trim. Might be easier in the long run. Also, the transformer for that new elevator, it went out, so we did have to replace that. So it was kind of a bummer. So it was about a $3,300 cost that we weren't expecting, but our budget still overall is doing pretty good. Right now, I'm currently working with...
That wasn't put in that long ago.
Four, maybe 5 years ago. So that kind of blew me up. You'd think that the one that's from the 70s would have gone out, but no, it's still rocking.
The issue there was we didn't have three-phase power at that building, and the elevator required three-phase power, so we had to do a phase converter. So we started out with a phase converter, and then that didn't work very good, so we went to that. The solid state deal, and then sounds like that went out. So.
Well, hopefully this next one will last longer, because it does get used quite a bit. Mm-hmm. I'm working with Wade in the fleet department. We really need to get new transportation vehicles. In both of the centers, the Cedar and Parowan, we have these Goshen buses. If you've ever been on those, I mean, they've got pretty steep steps getting up in them, and we've had multiple people either getting up in or getting out fall. So we need to have something that is easier for them. They're very loud, they're very rickety. We just need a better solution, and the doorways are very narrow, so when you have somebody that's falling in the door area and needs assistance, there's no way to really be on their side to assist them. So with working with Wade, we were kind of talking about doing a transit van, wider opening, a little bit lower to the ground, but we can also have it converted, adding in the wheelchair accessibility and hopefully some kind of either ramp or drop down steps that are shorter, making it easier for people to come in. What happens when they do fall, they get embarrassed, then they don't want to come in anymore, and then you've got somebody that sitting home alone, and then all of a sudden now they need Meals on Wheels. And the whole point is making sure that people are coming in and socializing and giving them that purpose in life. They love to come in and see their friends. They love to play the bingo. They love to have lunch, and we want to make sure that they can still do that, and that the difficulty of getting in our buses just because they can't drive is not what's holding them back. So hopefully we can get working on that. So not sure what the cost on that is. So like I said, we're working with Wade and we'll kind of come up with something for that. Also we did, take out the big bushes that were right by the front door at the Cedar Center. Last year when I very first started, our whole place was swarmed in yellow jackets, and they just love hanging out by that front door because those big bushes were right there. And so Thane and his crew, they came in, tore them out. We ended up putting cement in, and we put bike racks, which has been great because now it's actually had seniors saying, well, maybe I'll actually ride my bike here because there's a place to put my bike. So that's been awesome. So it's been really, really well received. And since we had the help with the sheriff from the sheriff's office, cost us less than $1,500, which was awesome. Couple of news. We got our newsletters up, which is what I included for you guys as well. It's going to be our third month coming up here real soon. Brand new. Of course, it's nothing that me or my staff have ever done before, so be gentle with us. But it gets to get out there to a bunch of people to show like what we offer, the different activities that are there, and we're also highlighting our staff and our volunteers in there. So definitely take a look at that. I think it's pretty cool. And on the 13th of June, we are going to have our first senior prom at the Cedar Center. So we have a limited number of tickets, of course, because we have to, you know, keep it under a certain number. However, we do have Art Vargas. He is a top performer in Vegas, and he is coming up to perform the hits of the 40s through the 70s. And it should be really, really awesome. So it's kind of like a, for seniors, we are asking for a $10 donation. But it'll be a really awesome event, and we're really excited about this. So
on the vans, do you just want to get one van that's got the wheelchair capability and or?
I'm going to want two. I'm going to want one in Cedar and one in Parowan. Okay. Yeah.
Right, are there any used vans on the market with lifts in them or anything?
There probably is some.
Okay. Airport shuttle used vans would probably be a good place to look.
Yeah, I think the hardest thing is we're trying to find something that's got kind of like half steps as opposed to a full step.
Can you pull up to a curb, maybe parallel to a curb, so it lessens the height when they step in?
Or? I mean, you maybe can in some places, but generally where we're at, we're right where the wheelchair accessibility is. And in front of the Cedar Center especially, that road just kind of caves down where the gutter is so bad that during the winter, that is just a solid sheet of ice right where you take the wheelchairs over. So we already need to figure out a solution for that too, that I think we have to work with the city. So I don't really know how you could do that because your bus would be at an angle. And I think it'd just cause more problems. But we actually had somebody who took us over an hour to get them off the asphalt and into the bus, into a seat. And I can't rely on all of my staff to have to help that. We have to make it easier for them.
Okay.
Any other questions? Okay, thanks, guys.
Thank you for the good report. Appreciate it. George, emergency management.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Good morning, commissioners. So my budget is well within its levels. I'm well within my budget. I've given you a whole list rather than going through that whole list of things that have happened since the last quarter. I'll hit some of the highlights. FEMA was once again going to cut us off on the 2023 flood funding. They said we hadn't made any movement. And I said, come on, guys, you haven't given us enough time. And so I got it extended till December. So we've got now until December to get in all our receipts and everything. And I'm working with Bruce. He's working with an engineer on the road out in Hamlin Valley out there. So we've got until December, so we've got another 6 months to get those receipts in. Like I said, I'm working with Bruce, and so we'll go on with that. Rich and I put in for another grant, FEMA grant for mitigation, wanting to dig a retention pond out there on Mid Valley Road. State came down last week. I was at a conference in St. George, but I drove up, Rich being out of town, I drove up and took them on a tour of all of the retention ponds where we wanted to dig and the two retention ponds that are out there on Mid Valley Road by that first development there. So they were satisfied. They took a lot of pictures, and we went on from that. We got our first check from FEMA. It was a little less than $7,000. It was a little over $6,900, but we actually got money for the 2023 floods. It's taken us 2 years and a lot of screaming and yelling and gnashing of teeth, but they finally sent us a check, and so we'll just keep working on the rest of the money. Now, the next thing I wanted to hit was really not connected to me, but I've been working with Bruce about the landfill. We've been having a lot of lithium battery fires out there, where you might have had one or two fires a year. We're now having 60 a year. And I hooked Bruce up. Part of the conference I was at last week, there was a class on Tuesday, I think, Monday or Tuesday last week, on lithium batteries, and I had Bruce go down and go to that, which he said was extremely helpful. But he and I have been discussing this, and he wanted to get SCBA for his guys out there because they're sucking in toxic fumes. Well, Chief Phillips and I have been talking. SCBA is really not the way. First of all, those tanks are 50 minutes to an hour. You'd have to have a lot of tanks, and they'd have to have a shuttle going over to the fire department getting them refilled, and they wouldn't be able to operate their equipment. So after Chief Phillips and I putting our heads together, we thought that maybe Pappers would be good for them with the right filters. And so I've got some extra funds in one of my lines. If it's okay with the commission, I'd like to go ahead and purchase those Pappers for the landfill and get them set up with the right filters so those guys aren't sucking in that stuff. Secondly, the state now is started a program where they're going to go through and test every fireman, volunteer and full-time in the state of Utah for cancer. I think that screening of those guys out at the landfill would probably be a good idea. It might save the county a lot of money on down the line as far as insurance claims for cancer because most of that stuff out there burning is carcinogenic. So I think probably wouldn't be a bad idea for the county to probably what's the name of the insurance company?
PHP.
If we just put in a request to PHP, I think that they would add that on to those guys out of the landfill. I think it'd be a good idea. And like I said, it would save a whole lot of liability, I think, for the county on down the line because there's a good chance these guys are going to come up with some cancer clusters after sucking that stuff in for a long time. So, any questions?
Is there anything in any discussions on how to resolve the issue with the lithium batteries?
It's not just a county or a state problem. It's not even a national problem. It's an international problem.
Right.
And everything has lithium batteries, from toothbrushes to radios to everything anymore. And, yeah, Bruce went to that class. I didn't go to the class. I thought it was more important that he go. Right now, I don't think there's a solution to it. You just have to you have to monitor those things. I don't think there's a way to get people not to throw them away. And sometimes even if you had a program where they separated them and people will throw their flashlight batteries into the garbage without thinking about it. So I don't think there's a way to completely do away with that problem. And those lithium batteries, you can split them open and they won't immediately start heating up, and maybe it'll be a week later. They've even had some of them that they split them, and it was like 2 years, and suddenly they would go off. So they're an extremely volatile source of heat. So, and they're going to start fires.
Have we had a fire recently?
Yes. When? We've had several. Just last week we had a fire that burned burned all night.
Oh, did it?
Yeah, and we're on schedule to have another 60 this year. So like I said, we went from maybe 1-2 a year to now 60.
I helped with one years ago that was a bad one, and we run equipment all night getting it put out. But that's not
the issue's just going to keep increasing
as lithium batteries increase and they put them in more and more stuff. Yeah, it's just going to get worse and worse. And right now, nobody has a solution for it.
So they're having this problem on all landfills?
All over the world. From Tesla cars to toothbrushes. Yeah. Wow. So, again, if it's okay with the with the commission's approval, I'll work on getting those PAPRs for his people out there. And I certainly would recommend cancer screening for those guys on a if not a yearly, maybe every other year basis to catch it. So
good idea.
It's a good recommendation. Yep.
Any questions? Anything else?
Thanks, George.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Let's see. Fleet Department, Wade.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So are you interested in that dance, Paul?
Yeah. I'm a senior now.
So.
I guess.
You might want to go.
I got gray hair.
Somebody's going to have to spike the punch bowl, Paul.
So Fleet Department budget's on track. So we've closed out 436 work orders last quarter. And that was anywhere from general maintenance, from oil changes and tires, to any fabrication needs, upfitting needs for the Sheriff's Department, Road Department, Parks and Rec. Just about every department has an upfitting need that has a vehicle. So that's been pretty busy. It's been a little bit slow on getting the upfitting going, just because trying to get parts. The company we use for the lighting and stuff like that, the emergency stuff, is they're usually 2 to 3 weeks out on their stuff. So
are they the only supplier we can get parts from?
Yeah. And there's other brands and stuff, but the system that we use, that the Sheriff's Department's used, that's where we go through its sound off signal. But we're getting, it's fresh, so we're getting caught up and starting to get more going, more mobile moving. So that should be coming along better. So Cody Murray, that was working for us, it was so great. His last day was last Thursday. So he actually gave us 3 weeks and help us keep going, but it was a big loss for the county.
Not good.
It is.
So he was really good at what he did. He'd done it for a long time, but we have Dave over there too, and Kelton, and they're great too. And Dave's really good with electrical. And
is Dave going to pick that up?
Well, he actually knew more about that system than Cody does. So yeah.
So he'll just pick it
so
up.
So he'll pick that part up, and we're going to do interviews tomorrow. And so our thought is to maybe move Dave kind of into that position. And I don't know if we'll get somebody that's that knowledgeable with the upfitting part of it. Mm-hmm. We'll be able to train him, and then we'll see how that goes. But for now, we're going to have Dave doing the upfitting, and I'll probably even jump in and do some of it too. So we're actually having to take 5 vehicles to PVI. We've got 13 to do. And so we're going to have to take some of them up there to help with that workload with Cody leaving this way. So, which is going to be a little bit more money to do that, but we're actually going to not have them do all the upfitting. We're gonna do some of it. We'll have them just do some, and then we'll bring back and do what we can, which will save some money. So like the radar system, I mean, a brand new radar system's about $5,000. We've been keeping the old ones and getting them recertified, so we'll be able to.
Do you do that in house, or do you have to send them somewhere?
We've been sending them. Well, there's a company that goes around that usually does Cedar City's and the sheriff's office. They're back. I think they're a back east company, and they just kind of come around. But I got a hold of Rulin. I can't remember his last name. EBS out of St. George. He does upfitting down there as well, and he can certify them down there. So we take them to him. And Kathy's actually looking into that to see what it takes to certify those. See if it's something we can get certified to do.
How often do they need to be recertified?
Well, I'm not sure exactly how often it is, but these ones we have. So they've got, you've got your head unit, and then you've got your antennas and your tuning forks, and they all have to be calibrated together. So that's what, you do that and certify them, but I can't remember how many years apart it is that they do that. So we're looking into that. But that kind of stuff will save us on these, the ones that we're having to take to up to PBI. So we've been taking a lot of the older equipment out of the vehicles and keeping what we can. So we've got a shelf of used parts, stuff like that we're trying to put back in. Some of the electrical components that we pull out that are outside, we're not going to reuse, that are in the engine compartment, just because of the heat and the stress they go through. We don't want to have to put something like that back in the police vehicle and have it fail later. So but a lot of the big stuff we're able to reuse, so it's helping us save quite a bit that way. Our auctions have slowed down just a little bit, just because I haven't got them on there, the vehicles on there, because I've been trying to help get the upfitting going, but we've got a few on there right now. So we've got probably 20 in line right now to get posted and put on there. So we'll get that going again here soon. And then Stephanie talked to you about those vans. The big buses that they have are gas guzzlers. And so, and they're not easy to get into. So the steps are tall and they're narrow, and we have to work on those every so often. But
how many people fit in them? How big of a bus are you talking
buses
about?
That they have? Oh, I don't even, you know how many fits in there?
20 or so?
Maybe somewhere in there. They're kind of the shorter. It's kind of like the cat buses at the city. Mm-hmm. Yeah, about the same thing.
So a van wouldn't hold as many, but it'd be more convenient. Okay.
Yeah. So there's some options out there, and I can look on some of the surplus websites and see.
That'd be great.
See what we can find that way for something that's maybe used too. So.
Okay.
Yeah. Other than that, that's all I've got today. Oh, I'm gonna meet with Enterprise.
Oh, I was gonna ask you about that
on the 4th, and just kind of go over some stuff.
I mean, as you looked through that, did you find some interest?
I haven't looked into it too much. I need to meet with Luke on it and look at the numbers, and then they gave me some references to call, which I need to do that still too. So,
all right.
So I'll let you know. Keep you posted on that. So
I texted Ron Larson this morning to see if he's where he's at on that building. I haven't heard back from him. So.
Okay.
Or Amber's.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you, Wade. Appreciate it. Good work. Public Defender? Do we have anybody from Public Defender's office?
Oh, I didn't hear from
her. She has to be called. If you're good with that, I'll just put her on the speaker.
Sure, sure.
sure she'll call back.
Okay. All right. Let's go to Jennifer, Human Resource. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
For our budget, currently the HR department is well below budget, and we do not foresee any anticipated budget issues for the 2025 year. In the hiring and recruiting, I've attached the statistics from our applicant site, Applicant Pro, now it's iSolved, just to kind of let you see the breakdowns on how many applicants we've had per position, where they're applying from, like Indeed, ZipRecruiter, you know, LinkedIn, that kind of stuff, just kind of for you to see how many applicants and that kind of thing. I thought that was kind of interesting. Mm. Since our last HR report on 224, we've interviewed, hired, and posted 14 full-time positions, 6 part-time positions, and 3 seasonal positions. We have had 9 promotions, and currently we are in the process of recruiting, interviewing, or promoting 9 full-time positions and 1 part-time position. So points of interest, the turnover for the first 5 months of 2025 is 4.4%, or 11 positions. In comparison, for the first 5 months of 24, the turnover was 9.68%, or 24 positions. So we're doing a little bit better than last year, which is great. We've had originally planned to hold an accident review board hearing this quarter, but we've, knock on wood or whatever, we've only had 2 accidents filed this past quarter, so we'll hold off on that until August. So we're doing great on that. Workers' comp, we kind of talked about this last quarter when we were meeting, but our EMOD decreased for the 2025 years to 0.76, which is the lowest it's been since 21.
Great.
It's awesome. And because of this, we were sent a dividend check. We get one every year, but this year we got one in the amount of $7,006.55, and I've turned that into the auditor's office today. I'm going to do a little bit of research to see where the trend is on that, so we can have kind of a breakdown on year for year, kind of what that is. This morning we received a PEHP rebate check in the amount of $10,689 for the LGRP. It is actually probably the lowest we've ever had, unfortunately. I think last year it was around $70,000, if I'm not mistaken. Don't quote me on that. I'll have to look at that. But we just barely got that today, so I thought I'd report on that. And then we can kind of talk about that a little bit next time if we need to. Betsy and I have attended a couple of trainings this quarter since our human resource certifications require training just to upkeep every year. We also attended the URS training outlined in the information that I've kind of talked about a little bit now. The rates for URS are retirement plan for the 2025-2026 fiscal year. Beginning in July of 25, the Tier 2 non-public safety hybrid plan, say that fast 3 times, the employee portion has increased slightly in the amount of 0.11%. In the legislative session, the bill presented unfortunately did not pass, which would have allowed Iron County or all the entities to cover that increase for the employee portion. So that is not on the table this year, unfortunately. So starting the first pay period in July, those employees in the Tier 2 hybrid plan will need to contribute the 0.11% into their retirement, and that will come out of their paycheck. They don't have to do anything, but that'll be the why behind maybe a tiny bit. We did a little bit of a math just to kind of see what that would entail, and it's like $20 a year, if that. But still, it's enough that I'll let them know, so they're not surprised either. So we've had some milestone anniversaries since our last report. Clayton Mitchell in the Sheriff's Office Corrections, April McDonald in IT, Krista Oxenreiter in the Justice Court, Ryan Turk in the Sheriff's Office Patrol, Jaden Thomas in Sheriff's Office Victims Advocate, and Trajan Evans in the Attorney's Office all celebrated 5 years of service. Let's see. We've got Bo Johnson in the Sheriff's Office Patrol, Tara Burt in DMV, celebrated 10 years of service. Steve Hunt in the Sheriff's Office Corrections, and Sandra Capps in the Attorney's Office, just barely today, or I think last week, celebrated 15 years of service. And Caleb Anderson and Rebecca Heaton in the Sheriff's Office Patrol all celebrated 20 years of service to Iron County. So congratulations to them. I've added the turnover as well as the workers' comp for your reference. And then, do you have any questions for me?
No.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Any luck with Candace?
She said she'll be available at 10 o'clock. So if you want to do your commission reports, I bet she'll be ready right around then.
All right. Or we can put her on another week or something.
We can do that, whatever.
However you'd like me to do.
Do you want to go ahead and go, Commissioner Robinson?
Sure. Attended several meetings, coupled with the jail construction, that weekly meeting. Things were moving along there and looked very positive. And budgetary issues there that were huge concerns previously now are hopefully getting ironed out and looking a lot better. Attended a meeting with the fire agencies in the area about wildland fires and mitigation of that and preparation for that throughout the coming season, and very good coordination. Had a gentleman from the state office that was down conducting that meeting, and he commended Iron County and the agencies that participate in that and how well they communicate and how well they get along, and said that they're a model for the rest of the state and wishes that everybody in the rest of the state would work as well together as Iron County. So that was very positive. We had a review of the 25-year plan of the fairgrounds. Just kind of went over some things there, and we have another one of those tomorrow to look at that and just keep continuing on down that road with that. So that's about it.
Thank you.
One other thing I've been chasing quite a bit is the agreements on the solar farms and where grazing and those issues seem to be coming up more and more. But we just need to be careful with the verbiage that we're putting in those conditional use permits, because originally there's a lot of assumption and handshakes of, yeah, we'll continue to be able to graze these. The weed control will be used locally, or we'll hire somebody locally to do that. And then as soon as those solar farms are sold to the next entity, those agreements are gone. Mm-hmm. So we need to be careful of how those are, how we're wording those in those conditional use permits.
I agree. I've talked to some ag folks. I think we need to start looking at requiring these solar farms to plant vegetation that's conducive for sheep to graze. Jake Benson and some of these guys, they sheep graze great under panels.
Yeah.
And right. And cows don't do too. Yeah. Or
they're too tall. Well. Yeah. Too tall. Rub on them a lot. They'll rub on anything. So. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's the very first one, you know, there was a handshake agreement of, yeah, we'll continue to let you graze that. And I think they're on their fifth owner now. And there's nothing in the, I've had Mary Lee went back and looked at the minutes from the original meetings on those, and there's nothing in there.
John, as we renew those, can we maybe work on that? Can you?
I think we should. I think we should insist on it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think there's kind of two documents. I think the conditional use permit is one, but the project area plan is the other. That's kind of the governing document when it comes to those incentives. And I think that's a good place to kind of memorialize that and say, listen, you know, and I think you'd want to be careful about how you word it, so you're not like, you know, Jake Benson shall herefore and therefore after, but basically, you know, a local grazer will, and you know, a pasture mix or something will be put down every 3 years or whatever.
I just mentioned Jay because I know he's one that's done it.
Yeah, I'm just saying, you know, I don't. Yes, of course. I want to write it generally enough to. Yeah.
Right. Sure. I just I don't think they all want to do it, but some do. And
yeah. Well, and
maybe we ought to, next time Adam's down, maybe we ought to have a meeting, a sidebar with him, and talk to him and just say, hey, this is the direction we want to go moving forward.
Well, and I wonder too, and I don't know enough about soils, but I know that some of those places, like Granite Mountain West, that naturally is going to devolve to sagebrush.
Yeah.
Whereas over here, you've got a little more moisture, possibly. I mean, I don't know. What do you think, Commissioner?
There's better soil. You know, a lot of it depends on the area and what
rocky
the original terrain was. But some of those areas, you know, they're very conducive to being continued to graze. We need to have something in there that talks about the weed control, because there's a weed control program, but they're going to go with the lowest bidder. And a lot of times the lowest bidder is using a non-selective herbicide. And so
right.
to capture that bid where somebody local is using a product that's much more expensive, but it's conducive to maintaining the growth that's there. So those are issues that have come up too as I've researched this.
So I think what we ought to do, maybe you and Adam and I ought to have a conversation, and
that'd be good.
I think that perspective is valuable. We just need to figure out, I think the real trick is to write it in a way that will work, you know, generically enough that will work for different soils, different conditions, but that will survive these changes in ownership. That, you know, we say you can't change ownership, but what they do is they have the holding company. People buy and sell the holding company.
Yeah.
And, you know, this Red Hills Renewables probably been sold 5 times since it was, you know, started in 2010. And so how do we write something that survives that? But then, you know, it may not make sense to graze sheep, I don't know, in every location.
Yeah.
So we need to figure out how to write that in a way that...
Well, we give tax incentives, and maybe we give a larger tax incentive if they're willing to do it.
Yeah.
Just, you know, use a
carrot. Commissioner Cousins had floated that idea.
Yeah.
Say, you know, we're going to give you 50% if you don't, if you do it, or we'll give you 50 if you do and 30 if you don't, or whatever. So,
and you know, irrigation would be tricky. I don't know that you could get away with that.
You'd have to, well,
be flood irrigation, I guess.
Flood or drip systems, but the drip systems are coming along very, very effectively.
Well, and I know that, you know, in places that aren't quite as harsh as here, they make some good use under those panels.
Yeah.
But they take advantage of the partial shade, all that kind of stuff. So I think we ought to have a conversation with Adam so that moving forward, to both your points, I think we can maybe get something that works better for
that'd be really good.
The developers, but also the local ranchers and the county.
Yeah, that way it becomes more multiple use.
Yeah.
So that's one of the rubs with the ag community is that we're putting these solar panels all over, you know, land that can be grazed.
You've got kind of a short calendar. Do you want to try and squeeze Candace in, or do you want to just?
We could, I guess, if, real quick.
What do you think, Sam? He's trying.
I'll go while he's getting her on the line. We are, after 12 years, Brian Theriot, who's been our executive director for 5 County, has submitted his letter of resignation. He's going to move on. So we've got that job description out. We put it out last week. It'll be out for about 2 weeks. And then the actual 5 County commissioners that sit on that board will be the hiring and interview board for that position. So we're working through that. We just recently had a finance meeting for 5 County, where we actually increased the levy. And Luke, I sent you that. We've been kind of taken from our reserves, and so we voted to raise that rate a little bit per county. Of course, Washington pays the lion's share of those bills. We're the second, and then you go to Kane and Beaver and Garfield in that order, but. We did about a 2% COLA for approve that for the 5 County employees. I met with Cedar City right there off of Highway 56 where the church and the Keymaker is right there. Those recharge ponds the city has. We made an agreement. Intellects, who's doing the excavation on the jail, needs extra material. We wanted them to build the pads up a little higher so we don't ever have to worry about flooding. And so they need a little more material. So I met with the city out there, and we have an MOU with the Cedar City to where
We had Platt survey that. There's a windrow down the middle between two of the recharge basins that we can take out. And so Intellect's cut a hole in the fence, and they're mining that material and hauling it over to the pads. And whatever we use there, we have an agreement that they can take out of our pit at the county over on Kitty Hawk. And so we'll just trade that material for material. We had our human service, five county human service meeting last week. We've got James Jetson, who's the director of the Care and Share, who is now serving on that board, and he'll be a great addition to that. That's really all I have. Do you have Candace?
She's available.
Okay.
Okay, Candace, I'm going to put you on speaker now. You're good.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks for accommodating. I just stepped outside the courthouse. It's my law in motion calendar. As far as budget goes, everything's operating great. We're under budget. We've got some district court expenses coming up just because we have some criminal trials, but nothing of concern. Like I said, we're still operating under budget. As far as attorneys go and positions there, Cliff Gravett, who occupies the grant-funded position, does not want to renew. So we have an opening for that, and that is the IDC grant-funded position. So that one seems to kind of be ever-evolving or revolving because it happens to, you know, pay the lease or compensate the lease, and it's just a one-year contract. But we do have some other attorneys that are interested in that, so I'll just keep the commission updated when we hear about that. And then IDC is also getting ready to vote or agree on their grant applications, and so I put those in last month, and so I also expect to be coming back to your to the commission in the next month or so to hopefully approve those grant applications that I made. So any questions?
I don't think so for me.
I don't have any. Thank you.
Thank you for all the work. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
I think wraps up our reports. We'll go ahead and take a break, maybe come back at quarter after the hour and resume our meeting. Good. Okay, welcome back to our Iron County Commission meeting. Before we go to public comments, or Cindy, you could, would you like to come up and welcome to our meeting and come up and tell us what's going on in D.C.? I appreciate you coming to our meeting and give you a minute if you'd like.
Thank you. Good to see you, commissioners. And for those who do not know, my name is Cindy Bullock. I work for Congresswoman Celeste Malloy. It has been kind of crazy in D.C. since the first of the year, but maybe we're on a good trajectory. We did pass out of the House a budget bill. I'm sure you have to be under a rock to have not heard about the big, beautiful bill, but we passed it. Congressman Malloy had attached to that a lands amendment transferring some property, mostly in Washington County, a little bit in Beaver County. That was pulled out, so that is not part. But we got a lot of feedback. There's just a lot of miscommunications in that bill, and because we'll probably reintroduce, I just want to make sure that you guys are aware. That was for infrastructure, and mostly if you looked at the maps, you know, 10,000 acres, A, seems like a lot of acreage, but it's really not that much. But it wasn't one big parcel of 10,000 acres.
Wasn't that a little bit in conjunction with Senator Lee's bill, the Houses Act?
There was one piece that is in conjunction with that, and then a lot of
it. Kind of the same kind of principle, right? Use some of those little parcels that are just.
For some of it, but there's also a lot that was like accessing that was a road access to a well that the Washington County Conservancy District wanted to be able to make sure that they had deeded access rather than, you know, to this well site so that they could make sure that it was not, so it was, you know, maintained for some pipeline roads. It was, you know, the map was all over and just little parcels here and there. Besides a couple of that were in conjunction with or similar to Senator Lee's bill. Other than that, she is, as I think I have told you before, she is on appropriations. So we are busy with budget and other things. Also in conjunction with that, she has met with a number of different agencies and so if there are things, I mean, I know there are things, but like she met last week with the Army Corps and kind of asked them some pretty pointed questions on particular Panguitch Lake Dam. They have really been hard to deal with as an agency, and we see that a lot. The local people, whether it's BLM, Forest Service, Army Corps, are usually pretty good, but sometimes the bureaucracy, it just makes it hard for anything to get done. So we've had some pointed questions about, you know, why is it so hard to replace a dam that if it really does break completely, it will devastate. So she has had those conversations in those committee meetings. She did have a natural resource. That's the other committee she's on is House Natural Resources. And there was a House Natural Resources hearing in Cedar City at SUU 2 weeks ago. And then they did a tour of Fervo and looking at some different energy alternative and ways to be able to help the local economy and also for the energy independence that we need for the nation. And other than that, if you guys have questions, otherwise.
Well, I have a comment. There's a lot of misinformation on Representative Malloy's land deal. Tons of, and Leland Pollock would call them the rock lickers, right? that just spewed misinformation. And it was terrible.
Yeah.
So hopefully they can get that back again. The other thing I was going to mention was when I was first elected, the county out on Vandenberg Road dug a big gravel pit, and we wanted to take some of that water that came out of Quitchapaw Canyon and recharge it there in that gravel pit. And they need to, well, I mean, I don't know how many of you know Ron Torgerson. He's retired now, but he was with CITLA. Mm-hmm. And we were, and I called him. I'd never met him before, but I called him and said, hey, we're trying to, we got to cross CITLA land with a ditch to bring that water over to our recharge pond. And I said, could you come look at it? And he said, well, how about tomorrow morning? So I said, great. So he drove over from Richfield. We went out there and looked at it. He thought it was an awesome idea, great project. He, you know, he was really friendly, nice guy. Went back home and did the paperwork and had an approval that night by 5 o'clock. And that's the way it needs to work. So
that how was it should work, but
the
not
the fastest I've ever seen any always. Government agency work in my life.
Yeah, so. It's frustrating. I'm working with Ron as his mayor role.
Oh, is he the mayor?
He's the mayor in Kesherim. And Kesherim needs to expand their cemetery. So adjacent is BLM property, so we're trying to do a RMPP. And I talked, you know, he's like, can you see if you can reach out? And that's something that you gentlemen know, but that we can do, not always as the heavy-handed Congress, but just try to act as a mediator to try to get people in the same room. So I reached out to BLM and, you know, what's going on with this? We've been waiting for like 4 years. They're literally running out of room in the cemetery. And he said, well, it usually takes 7 years and it's only been 4, so I haven't even looked at it. And it's just like, are you kidding me? It shouldn't be that big of a deal. So there are issues. And then that reminded me too, Senator Lee has introduced a bill that will transfer some land or allow Bryanhead to buy some land to extend their public works building. We have a similar bill that we are getting ready to introduce in the House, and those will work through. But that, as you probably know, the city needs to expand.
Right.
They've grown. They don't have room in that small space
we've known about that.
To put in, even park their equipment. And so right now it's on leased property, so every time they want to even do anything, they have to go through this process, so they would like to just own that
right.
property. And then they're looking at other options for that parcel to maybe put some affordable housing for some of the employees and, you know, whatever they decide to do, but we're working on that. So
okay.
That's it for me, and if you
Thank
have
you.
Questions, you know how to get a hold of me.
You weren't on the agenda, but we'll consider that a public comment.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
For our legal counsel over here.
No action was taken here.
Okay. So we'll continue with our public comments. Is there anyone else that would like to make any comments today? Seeing none, we'll move on to item number 2, discussion and possible approval for financial support to start a youth gopher abatement requested by Becca Esplin, USU Extension and E&I Conservation District. Hi.
Hi, good morning. How are you guys?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Good. So it sounds kind of scary, gopher abatement, but I'm sure most of you know, and I appreciate the agricultural section of this meeting, but gophers are always a problem. Beaver and Garfield County have done gopher abatement for the past 2 years, and some farmers came to me and they're like, why aren't we doing this? And I said, okay, let's do it. So our proposal is that we want to put a bounty on their tails, basically. So they'll bring the tails into me, and I would pay them. It would go through the extension office. The E&I and local farmers have offered, if it's on their field especially, they would pay $1.50. So we're asking you guys to kick in $1.50, so the total bounty would be $3. So you could, our idea is you could give a lump sum, like, 1,500, that'd be 1,000 tails. And when we're done, we're done. And it's our first year. We'll see how it goes. We've provided traps, and we'll do a workshop with the kids to teach them how and connect them. It'll bring better connections with our agricultural community to some of the kids that might not have those connections already, and another way to get kids outside. So that's what I'm asking.
What, Luke, What budget would that come out of if we did something?
General fund.
Just general? Yeah. Okay. And so the you say the maximum would be 1,000 tails times the $1.50, $1,500 max.
What area are you looking at working on?
All of Iron County. There's gophers everywhere. So especially like our workshop would probably be at the Hunter's Farm. And we'll start there.
Irrigated ground?
Irrigated ground, yes.
Okay.
So
do they do the kids use 22s? What do they
No, so we have they've done research on the best traps for kids to use especially, so there's a few kinds. There's one, it's green, it's called Macintosh, I believe. You know, it's a little bit easier to set, then the kids can set two of them, go in both ways, pull them out, and just clip off their tails and bring them to me, and throw the gophers out and reset the traps.
That is the safer trap, but still, that's
it's a trap. Kinda, it is. So that's why we're going to have, do you guys know in Beaver Mark Nelson, he's the extension agent up there, and he's done it for 3 years, and he hasn't had any accidents that he's told me. So we'll have him come down and teach him.
No kids have brought their own pinky in?
Not yet.
Okay.
Oh, man.
So we don't care how they get them, but those are the traps that would be provided through extension.
Okay. Mike?
Becca, is this...
Come up to the mic, Mike, so we can get on the minutes. Thanks.
Mike Worth in Iron County. Is this program just on anywhere in this county, or is it specifically to farms that cooperate in the program?
Anywhere in the county. I'm not going to – we'll ask – the farmers want it on their fields. And so they might even pay more if they come and do it on their fields. Mm. But I'm not going to be like, hey, GPS location where you caught these.
Mm. Right.
Because that's a lot of work. We are going to probably do some population studies where we know the kids are going to catch them. And that would be on irrigated farm ground.
Yeah, just one word of caution. Just be very careful that all those traps are picked up before they go out to cut.
Yes.
So swathers and traps do not do well together.
Yeah.
Knives on a rotary swather do not do well with those traps.
Right. So if they're ever trapping on a farmer's land, we'll have those connections made, and they'll call the farmers and work it out. And so it'll be good for the kids to learn how to talk to people as well.
That's a good point.
Okay. What do you think, Ken? You're the ag guy.
I'd support this program.
Okay. Is that a motion?
I'd make a motion to, where are we at? To approve financial support to start a youth program for gopher abatement.
Amount of $1,500?
In the amount of $1,500.
I'll second that. So it's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Thank you so much.
That brings back memories. When I was a kid in Moab, they had a bounty on skunk tails.
Oh.
And we were pretty hard up for money back in those days, and so we collected a bag of skunk tails, and we walked in the courthouse in Moab to get our bounty, and they were willing to pay any amount just to get us out the front door. I'm not going to say that was part of our plan, Rich, but... All right, number three, review, discussion, and possible approval of reimbursement agreement between Iron County, Cedar City, and BZI Innovation Park for sewer upsizing.
So we have in our operations times when infrastructure needs to be built for, in this particular example, sewer system. And what typically happens is a developer builds for themselves what they need, but that isn't good future planning or future proofing. And so at this juncture, Cedar City has a master sewer plan, which is shown here.
Is that the blue line?
That's all the lines. The blue and the red and the greens are sizes.
Oh, okay.
So... but they show where they're going. You see the arrows there, Commissioner. And so we have a pump station up there in BZI where the gravity is going to be working in our favor. And so with discussions with Cedar City and Iron County, because we're interfacing between unincorporated and city properties, we had to determine what percentage of benefit both the county received and the city received when this is built out. This is not all built out yet, but there is certain infrastructure that's currently being built on BZI, which we required for them to get their permits, in which they had to upsize their sewer lines, as well as that lift station will have to be upsized. That's a discussion for down the future. So we went from a sewer line that was necessary for the industrial park size to a sewer line that was projected to take everything else that would come to that location.
Frank's industrial development going to tie into this too?
Is that all of you see the blue line down
that's
there?
That's his, right?
That's Silver Hills.
Okay.
All of that would come in.
That's good, because at one time he was thinking of going west and doing some ponds.
He had talked about doing a private sewer system. And so there was quite a bit of discussion last summer between.
So there's enough fall from there over to that lift station then, huh?
Correct. From on the blue line, and then the one going, that other blue line going north and south actually goes south, not north. And that's where a lot of discussion between the Iron County Engineering and Cedar City Engineering came into play.
So what are the sizes? What's the blue, red, green? What
it's probably off to the side, the legend. The red line is a 30-inch line. I can tell you that. It goes up Iron Springs Road, as you can see there.
Now, will that be put in? Does that go right down the road?
It goes off to the side.
Okay, so we're
keeping it out of the right. We're keeping it in the right of way on the eastern edge.
We don't want to dig up the road then.
Correct.
And that'll
correct.
And we rebuild that.
And right. So, as an example, is the rally stop, which is going in on the corner of 53, 56, Iron Springs, that location. They are required to put in a 30-inch sewer line that's going to be stubbed from one side of their property to the other. That's part of their conditions of getting a permit. It's far more than what they need, so it's an upsize. Well, the reason we're here in this discussion is because after discussion with Cedar City Engineering and our department, we had to work out who's benefited percentage-wise, city versus county. And it all came down to zoning. What we have zoned as a possibility for growth and what they have zoned for a possibility for growth. Our zoning is south of 56 is all R20. There's not going to be a large development down there without having those property owners come together and decide to create a subdivision that would support a sewer system. No one on a 20-acre piece is going to want to have a pay for a sewer line. Mm-hmm. And so we went back and forth. And so let's go to the chart, and I'll show you what we came up with. So this is the you all should have received a copy of this. So we broke it down into city, manufacturing, industrial, central commercial, regional commercial, high density, low density, and medium density single family residents. And then we did the Nichols complex, which we gave. This is all future proofing, and therefore it's also fuzzy. It's really fuzzy trying to figure out what the future will look like and how long it will take to get there. Mm-hmm. So as you see on the Frank Nichols development, Commissioner Cousins, we gave them 2,000 units. And the city agreed to that what happens. And so at the end of the day, we looked at, if you go over there to city areas, John, to the right up there, you go down and you see the city has committed or agreed. They have not yet met in city council. So this is where what they're taking to their city council is what I'm bringing to the county commissioner. They believe, and we believe, that 62.3% of the development will be within the city limits. We believe that 37.7% will be in unincorporated Iron County. And so that's where the break is. Now, let's say that a project costs, and I'm going to use some round numbers here. Let's say a total project costs $1 million, and the developer is going to need to spend $400,000 of that. We don't have anything to do with that $400,000 for their need. They have to pay that. We are only paying for the $600,000 that we required to upsize it. And that split is going to be of that $600,000. So Cedar City will take 63% of that, and we'll take 37% of that $600,000. And that'll be our portion. We will recover that in impact fees and connection fees. But there are times when government has to step forward and be the leader, because we can't wait for development to do it first. We want to be ahead of that. We wouldn't want to build anything for immediate use, because we'd always be chasing the upsize. So I propose that the county accept these. We have done some serious negotiations. We have felt comfortable. Sam and I were at the meeting last week in which we finalized that this is what they would take to their city council, and we would bring here these percentages. So I recommend that we adopt our share of this project.
What is that total?
Pardon me?
What is the total going to be for our share?
37 point.
Our share is 37.7.
Of 600,000?
Well, we don't.
We don't know.
We don't know the number.
We don't know yet.
We do not know what the final number is, because they're still designing the lift station. We have a good idea of, we know what the percentage of the sewer lines inside the park are, but we do not know the final number on the lift station. And so, for Commissioner, I used $1 million. Their bond is $9 million. Just to give you an idea, infrastructure bond. Now, that does include the roads, the sewer system, the lift station, but that's the bond that's approved that they have, that Iron County has is utilizing to ensure that infrastructure is built. And we're releasing that as inspections prove that it's been installed and it's meeting our standard, of which we will keep a 10% of that at the end of the year of the when they're done, for a 1-year warranty period. But I can't give you a final number, because we don't have a final number.
Okay. What's the timeline on this?
On the sewer, the timeline is pretty much done. Our upsizing, we know what that is. But I don't have a hard number yet. I've been asking BZI for the last couple of weeks, give me a hard number of what the cost is. And they're just trying to get through.
But the timeline of building this. And
the lift station?
Yeah.
The lift station hole has been dug, and it's going to be started this summer. They'll be installing this. And with that, there will be other moving. I shouldn't say they're moving. But there are other things. There's a force main that has to go over to 4500 off of that lift station. So if you go back to the picture, so with the pump station, the PS there still has to be, that green line has to be installed to 4500 as well.
So I think the commissioners are getting at, do we have any idea of what the cash outlay may end up being? And then when would you... Like, over what period of time would you expect that to be able to come back to the county? And I'm actually going to ask it in a little bit more pointed manner, too. We have monies that we've collected that we've had trouble distributing, because they were impact fees for sewer. And I don't know whether those could be used for this. you know, does that have to come out of the general fund? Is that appropriate?
It will not be coming out of the general fund, John. Yeah,
I mean, those are the kind of questions.
That's what they mentioned. You were going to use those fees, right?
We're going to discuss that. We've discussed that as staff.
Does the Iron County have to front the money for a few years?
No. There should be enough funding to cover our portion, or at least a large portion of it. And then we may have to cover front some of
that. From the initial BZI, is that the idea?
For the upsizing, the initial upsizing we'll be fronting. But we, if I remember the contract that we were looking at, we have a 5-year period.
Right.
So we have time. We're not going to be required to do this immediately. We are going to use some of those funds, as you were talking about, right now to do a progress payment.
Okay.
But they will not come out of the general fund. They will come out of the monies that have been collected for sewer.
I think the underlying question would be, what chance does this have to becoming a millstone around the neck of the county's budget? And it sounds like not much.
I was going to say, not a very likely chance.
Sounds like
chance.
That fund we've got will pretty much cover it from what you're
we
saying.
We believe that we have and will have.
I just want to clarify that because.
No, and those are great.
It's really a great.
And I think that's what Commissioner, you're right, that's what Commissioner
We've troubled
Robinson.
Over that for 8 years trying to figure out what to do with that.
And this has been a real, and this is a great place to utilize that funding.
I think we used a little bit of that for a clarifier contribution to Cedar City.
We did. I think we had $60,000 on the clarifier. So we keep using it, but this will become an opportunity for the auditor's office to get to a basis that where they're moving forward in good faith.
Yeah, and it's tricky because it's Cedar City system, but yet... Like the lift station at Westview, you know, how do you spend impact fees? Should you collect impact fees? And reasonably you should, but, you know, it's been a real conundrum. So I'm actually really happy. I hope you didn't want to – I don't mean to take that wrong. I was just trying to clarify that are we going to have a big cash outlay? Is it going to be, you know, negatively affecting our budget? Is it general fund? And you answered all those questions. So
yeah. We have another one coming up. Two, which I'll bring to the commissioner's attention since you've asked, out off of Mid Valley Road to the north, where all that's going on, that lift station at Painted Desert, from what we're seeing, and I met with the city last week, and they're going to draw up a proposal, and because at that location, one developer needs to get into that lift station, but we're looking at all the things that could get into that lift station. Properties, all the other properties that could get into that lift station so that we upsize it once, that we do it properly.
Right.
But it will not all be the burden of the single developer. It will have to be some monies up fronted by the county and then collected upon the development of the other properties that would share that.
People tie in, they'll
so
be
those projects come online.
Just like they did. When that lift station was built, it was built for 436 connections. And that was done quite a while ago.
Yeah.
And the only connections at that time were Rancho Bonita on Mid Valley Road. Then Peakview and then Sunset, and we went a little further. And then there was a slowdown of the economy, and it sat. Well, now Rancho Bonita 2 has been built. Rancho Bonita, Painted Desert took over portions of that. Painted Desert is now put in for a second phase. We have Sage Hill. But this new development was never part of the 436 connections. But the logical place for them to go is to that lift station.
So, and I'm beating this dead horse now, but with your projections, does this project and the one to the north
exceed our budget?
Use up the remaining accumulated impact fees?
We do not want to get we want to get our portion of the impact fees spent, which are what's the right word, Luke? Too old?
Yeah. Oh.
Now.
Get those off the books.
Yeah. So we can get those off the books by December 31st.
Yeah.
And there is still a significant balance.
So even at that, you don't anticipate using all that up and having to even do more?
No. We're trying to do this in a way that we can do them and stay within those collected fees and future collected fees.
How much do we have in that fund? Is it like 400?
Pardon me?
How much do we have in that fund? Is it around 400?
What was it, 750?
Oh, is that much now? Wow. It's grown a lot. Because it used to, when I...
Been a lot of growth in the unincorporated areas, yeah.
And the older funds are about 450?
Five.
So
the ones that are dating to the point where we're going to be in trouble.
So you can use those first and get those off the books and then our...
That's the goal, get them off. Get us right with the rules and the auditors at the state level.
Right. Thank you. Thanks for the 20 questions.
So for today's purposes... if you do take any action, it would just be to approve the portion. Right now, the agreement that I submitted is not finalized. There were just some minor edits. I'd be okay to have you approve this in substance.
Just approve a percentage, not an amount.
But, yeah. And so because we don't have the final numbers for today's, I'll just ask that you approve Rich's proposed county portion, and then we'll come back with a finalized agreement for your approval.
Okay.
So basically, just state the 37.7% number?
Right.
Okay. Make a motion to approve the agreement between Iron County and Cedar City and BZA Innovation Park for sewer upsizing to 37.7% would be the county's obligation on that.
Anything else?
That'd be good for today.
Yeah, I'll second that. So it's moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Thank you, Rich.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Appreciate all your work on that. That's a lot. Personnel, Jennifer.
Hello again. In Sheriff's Office Corrections, Peter Merrill and Jackson Dastrup were both selected from the most recent competitive interviewing selection process to backfill the vacant full-time Deputy 1 position effective 5/25/25. Also in Sheriff's Office Corrections, Christopher Carl has passed the required testing to receive bilingual pay effective this pay period, April 25th, 2025. And then in the Weed Department, Staley Adams was selected to backfill the vacant seasonal weed sprayer position effective 5/27/25.
Any questions on those? No. Entertain a motion.
Make a motion to approve the personnel changes as listed in the agenda.
Second. It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Motion carries. Thank you, Jennifer. County boards. Do we have any county boards we need to discuss? Or... I don't think we have a closed session today, do we? We do?
Oh, sorry, no.
Oh.
Yes to your question, Gene.
Okay.
Sorry.
I did want to, can I just bring up one thing with properties? It's not really a non-delegated, but we've been making progress on the jail disposition, the old jail, visiting with the Board of Realtors, trying to get some bids from realtors on that. Made some arrangements with the jail commander with Shalon to be able to let the to kind of accompany the appraiser on a walkthrough of the building, and then we're still moving forward under your direction with disposition of those 18 acres that are surrounded by Eldon Harker out in the area of the old Burl
Airport
International. International Airport out there. So. Yeah, anyway.
You heard back from the Board of Realtors? Is there...
Not yet. I went over there and left some information, but she had chipped her tooth, and so that was last week. So she was emergency dentisting. Yeah. But I have visited with some of the folks on there, and I think there's some excitement about it. So.
We have interested parties, so
yeah,
it'd be nice to get that going. So I think that wraps up our meeting. Chair will declare this meeting adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you.